Hey there, agility friend. If you've listened to a few of my podcast episodes, you know that I'm a huge fan of something called growth mindset. You can have access to the best instruction in the world, and you can have the best dog in the world, and the best skills in the world, but if you don't have a solid mindset and approach to the challenges that sport and life are going to toss your way, you're not going to be able to really make the most of all of those bests that you have, you know, best instruction, best dog, best skills, all that stuff. I'm so passionate about the importance of our mindset when it comes to dog agility and really everything in life that I've written an ebook about growth versus fixed mindset, what the hallmarks of those two mindsets are, and how one can really propel you along your agility journey and one may really be holding you back, maybe without you even being aware of it. That ebook is not for sale anywhere, but it is available for free to subscribers of my email list. So if you're curious about what a growth mindset is, what a fixed mindset is, and how to ensure that you've got the right mindset for making the most of your dog agility training and handling journey, head to podcast.theagilitychallenge.com and scroll down till you see the link to subscribe to my email list and get that ebook. It's totally free and it's a game changer. Check it out today at podcast.theagilitychallenge.com. This is the Agility Challenge Podcast with Daisy Peel. You're listening to episode 4. Welcome to the Agility Challenge Podcast. I'm your host, Daisy Peel. Join me as I talk about everything related to the mental side of the sport of dog agility. If you've ever felt overwhelmed by negative self-talk or lack of confidence, or if your dog training to-do list seems so long that you don't even know where to get started, then this podcast is for you. For more podcast episodes, training content, and coaching from me, head to www.theagilitychallenge.com, where members get access to monthly training and handling challenges, in addition to league play and a whole lot more. Let's dive in with today's episode. Welcome to episode 4. Yesterday, I had the good fortune to be able to slip out of my normal routine and go to a seminar. I don't often get the chance to be a participant in seminars because I'm usually either teaching or organizing them, and it was a lot of fun. Every once in a while, I get to do that, and it's just kind of nice to put my student hat on. And I always feel like if I can come away from a seminar with just one tiny little tip that really sticks with me, then it was definitely worth the time and effort and money to go. And I got a couple of really good tips that I felt like answered some questions that I had had. I went prepared with some questions and it was a great day. And then I got to come home. It was just a one-day deal and work on the podcast for you guys. So I've had a few listeners to the podcast reach out and ask how they can work with me virtually or in person. I do teach private lessons in Ohio at my facility. And probably the best way for people to work with me is in the Agility Challenge. If you go to www.theagilitychallenge.com, it is open for registration all the time. For a while, I would only open it for parts of the year and then close it, but now it's just open all the time. You can register anytime. You can register as a monthly member or as a yearly member. But I basically have all of my content. All of the courses that I've designed are now in the Agility Challenge at theagilitychallenge.com. And also I provide new content every month for people to use to learn from. And I give feedback on all of that. So you can always ask questions and try the sequences and the training yourself and post some videos and you can always get feedback. So that's usually the easiest way to get in touch with me and work with me. I do teach seminars around North America primarily now, but I'm so busy with the Agility Challenge and with my facility in Ohio that I don't do a whole lot of teaching on the road, but that does happen as well. So if you're interested, you can reach out to me and email me daisy@daisypeel.com and see if I've got any availability. So today I want to talk about a topic that is pretty common. And it also ties in with what we talked about last week when we discussed scarcity and FOMO, that's fear of missing out, and sparkly things. So if you're curious about that, you can check it out. Episode 3, that was at podcast.theagilitychallenge.com/3 for that episode. And I want to talk this week about confusion, because confusion is a pretty common thing for pretty much all of us to experience in one form or another. And pretty often, a lot of us are confused. It's pretty easy to get confused. There's a lot of information out there, especially on the internet. And a lot of us, including myself, are consuming a lot of information, whether it's politics or news or dog agility training or obedience training or, you know, what have you. There's just a lot of information out there, and it's very easy to access that information. There are facts here, facts there, facts everywhere, alternative facts, and it can be really hard to know what to do with all of that knowledge. If you're an instructor, you probably don't care too much for it when your students come to you and tell you about something that they found on the internet or maybe something they heard at a seminar. Because a lot of the time, they're either one of two things is happening. They're telling you this great thing that they heard or found on the internet, and you're thinking, yeah, I told you that 100 times. Why didn't you just listen when I told you? So that's often happens. And then the other thing that a lot of people who are instructors get a little bit frustrated with is that a student comes to you, they found this latest and greatest information on the internet or heard it at a seminar, and it's information that you know is going to potentially prevent them from fully committing to some advice or a plan of action that you've provided with them and that you've prepared for them and that you really want to help them see through to the end. Of course, as an instructor, you might get frustrated when a student comes to you and that happens, but as an instructor, we tend to do exactly the same thing ourselves. It's pretty crazy how we can be super frustrated when a student comes to us with, hey, guess what I just saw on the internet? Guess what I just saw at this seminar? Guess what I just saw at this show, at this competition? And we're thinking, yeah, I told you that 100 times. Or we're thinking, oh, now I'm going to have to work extra hard to get you to commit to this plan that I know is going to work if you would just put your nose to the grindstone. And then we do the exact same thing ourselves. So it might be that a friend has told us about a brand new online course that they've discovered, and it's so-and-so is designing the courses and giving out information, and it looks like it's going to be pretty good, and maybe we should just sign up. Or maybe we're told about a new way to teach running contacts. Like for me, that's kind of a biggie since I've been teaching running contacts since 2007, a long time. But we're told about a different way to train running contacts, or we're told about a new way to train a sit stay, or we are told about, or we see an advertisement for a new supplement that's going to cure our dog's arthritis, inflammation, and aging related issues. Or we find out about a new jacket for our dogs that's got laser lights in it, or a blanket that's going to make our dogs impervious to injury or aging, or you name it. We do it too. We all do it. And, you know, if you thought that your own nutrition and diet was tough enough to stick to, there's always some new food that you should feed your dog or shouldn't feed them. You should feed raw to your dog, and you're a terrible person if you don't feed raw, or you're a terrible dog owner if you do feed raw. And it just goes on and on and on. There's also a ton of information on canine fitness. One instructor says one thing. Another instructor says, oh no, that's a terrible way to do it. Do it this way. There's also a ton of information on handling, where one handling school or methodology says you have to do it this way, and another handling school or methodology will castigate those who follow group A and insist that the only way to do it, the only one true handling way, is to do it the way group B does it. There's just so much information out there and so many competing interests, and so much marketing being thrown at us, and just a ton of decisions to make, so many decisions to make constantly. And the crazy thing is that with all of that chatter and information and marketing and conflicting information and competing interests being thrown at us, we sort of forget about our inner wisdom. We sort of forget about our gut instinct. And furthermore, sometimes we're even told that our gut instinct is wrong, and sometimes it is, but also, a lot of us have kind of a sense that something's not quite right. Do we really know nothing about our dogs? Do we really know nothing about how to relate to an animal or to, you know, our spouses, our partners, or animals too? Do we really know nothing about rewarding the things that we want and making the things that we don't want our dogs to do unrewarding? Do we really know nothing about nutrition? I mean, maybe we don't know much. But most of us know something, and most of us have that inner voice that can call BS on some product or method or whatever it is that's making claims that sometimes are at best naive and dubious and at worst deceptive. It's kind of a case of learned helplessness. Now, if you guys might have heard the term learned helplessness before, I can give you a couple examples of learned helplessness. Learned helplessness is essentially when a creature, be it an animal or a person, has learned that if they simply stand still and wait, they will receive further information or help and be shown or told what to do or have the job done for them. So here's a human example. Learned helplessness in the kitchen. My husband is a really good cook. He enjoys cooking. He really likes experimenting with spices and food preparation. He really likes making brisket and smoking meat. And he's pretty adept in the kitchen. I'm not clueless in the kitchen. I can prepare food in the kitchen. I just don't view it as a hobby the way he does. So when he's really busy in the kitchen, I feel like I need to help. How could I just stand there and let him do everything in the kitchen? So I ask him, is there anything I can do to help? Knowing full well that the answer, if I get an answer, because he's busy, is going to be probably he's just going to say, no, don't bother. And occasionally he's going to say, could you do this or that? And this doesn't happen this much anymore, but it has happened in the past because I've consciously gotten better about it because I just don't want to do this anymore to him because it makes me feel terrible for just being, it's kind of lazy. Anyways, so he would say something like, well, can you chop a tomato? Can you chop this tomato? And I would say, okay, well, which knife do I use? And he would tell me or show me which knife to use. A lot of the times he would just grab the knife and instead of grabbing the knife and saying, here's the knife, take this knife, chop this tomato, he would just take the knife and chop it. But if I said, can you show me which knife to use? Then he'd show me which knife to use. And then I would say, well, how do I cut it? Do I cut it lengthwise or do I cut it around the equator of the tomato? And this is it's kind of a subtle form of learned helplessness, because if I just start chopping this tomato and I am doing poorly at it and I'm not really making too much of an effort to do better at it, probably what's going to happen pretty soon is that the knife is going to be taken out of my hand and he's going to chop the tomato. And so I kind of learn if I just sort of look dumb with the knife, then I will have the job taken away from me and he'll just chop the tomato for me. Now, this is kind of a two-way street, because with the dogs, for a lot of us, we set the dogs up to do a behavior and then we just can't hardly stand to watch them not do it quite right. And so we jump in and quote unquote help. We jump in and lure them or, push their butt down into a sit stay or something like that, where instead of actually making a learning opportunity out of the moment, we just do it for them. We put their butt on the ground or we lure their nose up or we say sit, sit, sit 100 times. So that's kind of what learned helplessness is. So we have also kind of developed a sense of, or a way of learned helplessness when it comes to all this information that's coming at us and all of these decisions that we need to make, where we kind of just want somebody to tell us how to do something. Like, there's no way I could figure out how to teach my dog to have a sit stay, so I need to have somebody tell me exactly what to do. There's no way I could figure this out. There's no way I could figure out how to teach my dog to walk on a loose leash. I need 5 different online courses and I need 5 different leashes as well. And also things like, well, I have a day job. I work all day. I don't have time to figure things out. Or my dog is the most unique and special dog in the world and nobody has ever had a dog like mine with problems like mine. So I need to find the most unique and special dog trainer in the world to help me. And that doesn't exist. And I don't have access anyway. Or my dog doesn't like toys, so I need another method to teach in this particular topic. Or my dog doesn't like food, so I need another method to teach him this particular topic. Or, well, I'm getting older and I'm never going to be able to keep up with young handlers anyway. This is all part of aging in the sport, so I may as well not bother with teaching my dog this or that topic. So there's just a lot of indulging in indecision and confusion at some point. And I use the word indulging specifically because when you have a lot of options, who do you believe And how do you decide? When you have a lot of options, it's really easy to try something for a few days and then decide, well, that doesn't work, and then blame that particular method or product and move on to the next thing, the next bit of marketing that's been thrown at you, or just quit entirely with working on your sit stay problem or your running contact problem or your weaving problem and satisfy ourselves with the status quo. And I keep using sit stays as an example, but like I said, weave pulls, contacts, bar knocking, off courses, you name it. A lot of the time we'll try something for a few days. It doesn't work after a few days or even after one training session. We blame it on the method and then we just quit entirely and satisfy ourselves with the status quo. Or we tell people, yeah, I'm looking around. I haven't quite decided yet on which course to take, but I'm going to get to it. So I use the word indulgent specifically because confusion can absolutely be an indulgent emotion. Although that might seem weird and you're thinking to yourself, all right, Daisy, nobody really likes feeling confused. I don't like feeling confused. Why are you saying that I'm indulging in being indecisive or confused? Well, I say it's indulgent because the only way that you can be confused is if you don't make a decision on something. And making decisions can be scary and it can be uncomfortable and it absolutely opens you up to failure and vulnerability. You have to do something now and you have to maintain internal integrity, which is something I talked about in a previous episode. I think it was episode one, podcast.theagilitychallenge.com/1. It was either one or two. And when you make a decision, you have to do something that's maybe new or uncomfortable or out of your ordinary. And in that regard, confusion can absolutely be the comfortable and familiar way of being. So staying in confusion can be more comfortable and more familiar than taking action on something which can open you up to failure and vulnerability. Confusion's a little bit of a lie though. And the reason why I say it's a lie is this. So for example, let's say that you're confused about which running contact plan to choose. There are several available, but you're not sure which one to follow. And let's say, okay, well, you've got these plans. Here are these three online courses. And what if I told you that you have to choose plan A? And if you don't commit to plan A and follow it for 6 months, I'm going to cut your dog's foot off. Now, that's pretty dramatic. But if I told you that, if I said, all right, if you do not follow plan A for the next 6 months, I'm going to cut your dog's foot off, then you'd make a decision immediately and you'd stick to it. I mean, realistically speaking, the decision you would make would be Daisy's crazy, I'm out. But for the sake of argument, you would make a decision immediately and you would stick to it. So you weren't really confused. You were just indulging in some confusion to avoid taking action on the choice of plan to follow so that you didn't actually have to choose and move forward with training that you weren't familiar with or confident about. Now, I've talked about this before as well. You do not need to feel confident about something to make a decision or take action on it. Confidence before you've accomplished something is not necessary and often not warranted. Why would you be confident about something if you've not actually done it yet? Why would I be confident I could train running contacts if I haven't done it yet? So you're choosing inaction because you're not confident. You're waiting to feel confident about something in order to take action on it, when really you don't need to be confident at all. Confidence is not warranted. Courage is what you need. Courage and bravery. So you're indulging in confusion so that you don't have to take action on this choice of plan to follow, and you don't have to choose and move forward with the training. Then you can kind of stay in this comfortable and familiar place because you're not confident and you need some courage instead, but you're going to stay in this comfortable and familiar place. And then you're just treading water, basically. So having said that, I will say there are times when confusion is not indulgent. Now, of course, you are going to be confused about what plan of action to take. And it's not going to be indulgent. And let's talk about that for a moment. So there are times when confusion is not indulgent, and those times are when you really do need more information about something, or you really do need more clarity with an explanation of how to do something. So you need more information, or you need more clarity on the information that you've received. And in that case, you immediately take action. You reach out for information, for more information, or you reach out for more clarity. You want to know something more about a program, so you reach out to the person who's teaching the program and you ask them some questions. Or you've gotten an explanation from your instructor and you ask for more clarity. So in both of those cases, you reach out for information or clarity, you're leaving confusion behind. So now you know what you needed to know, and you might have to keep asking for more information and clarifying as needed, but that's different. You're not wallowing in confusion. You're actually asking for more information. And when I say asking for information, I don't mean you're Google searching for more information. I mean, you see that Daisy Peel has an online training program and you reach out to Daisy Peel for some more information, or you're going through Daisy Peel's Running Contact class and you reach out directly to Daisy, me, I'm using myself as an example, for clarification with one of the lessons in that program. That's a good example of where you might be confused about something, but by reaching out for information or clarity, you're leaving confusion behind and you've taken some actual action. But if you indulge in that confusion, meaning you don't move forward asking for more information, you don't move forward asking for clarity or more explanation, or could you explain that to me differently, show me a different way, then you don't actually have to take any action and you don't see any different results than what you're already getting. So if you need information or you need clarity, you don't need to get confused. You need to get motivated or brave or have courage so that you can ask for what you need, so that you can take action, so that you can move forward toward getting the results that you want. And sometimes it can take a lot of courage just to ask for more information or ask for clarity. So if you're taking an online course, or let's back up. Let's say you're trying to decide about taking an online course. You can ask other people on Facebook, and we see that all the time. You can put a post out on Facebook and say, hey, friends, what do you think about such and such online course? Trying to decide if I want to take it. Or you can reach out to the person who's actually developed the online course and say, could you give me some more information about your course? Could you give me some clarity with some of the explanations about what's in your course? So there's a difference between wallowing in confusion and then being confused, but taking some action to get out of confusion. So if you did what you were supposed to do to get some information, then you're moving out of confusion. Now, if you find yourself in a state of confusion and you don't know how to get yourself out of it, then ask yourself this question. If I did know what I was supposed to do, what would it be? And then the first thing that you're going to say is, well, I don't know. Obviously, if I knew, I wouldn't be asking. Then ask yourself again, yeah, but if I did know what to do, what would it be? What if I didn't have access to an online class? What if I didn't have direct access to instruction at all? If I did know what I was supposed to do, what would that look like? And you might ask yourself two or three times, because you'll be surprised, you will actually come up with an answer. It'll be like, once you sit around and actually force yourself to think about it, instead of waiting for someone to spoon feed you the answer, your brain might actually come up with a pretty good solution. And then you can think, well, all right, that sounds like a pretty good solution. Let me think about that some more. Instead of running to Facebook or social media and polling your friends, hey guys, I came up with this great solution. What do you all think about it? Ask yourself, do an internal poll. Now, another thing about confusion is that confusion can be a distraction from deeper emotions that we don't want to feel. And again, this is why I say confusion can be an indulgent emotion, and confusion can be a comfortable and familiar place to sit. So confusion can be distraction from deeper emotions like failure. We don't want to feel like a failure. And we definitely don't want to feel like a failure in front of peers, instructors, seminar presenters, judges. So humiliation, that's another one. And we also don't want to feel deprived. So failure, humiliation, and deprivation. And where does deprivation come in here? When we commit to a plan, we are committing to not following other plans and we may immediately suffer fear of missing out. So the moment you commit to one plan, you're saying no to all of the other plans. And it immediately there'll be a little voice in your brain that says, yeah, but you might be missing out. Keep your eyes open. Something better might come along. So we're kind of always looking over our shoulder. When we commit to something, we're kind of always looking over our shoulder to make sure we don't miss on something else. So we remain in that state of confusion because it's easier and more comfortable than committing to a plan of action that opens us up to failure, humiliation, and deprivation, or at least the possibility of those. So we don't want to chance those feelings. So we just stick to confusion and indecision. And I keep sort of commingling those two terms because confusion also shows up as indecisiveness. And a lot of us just kind of like to think, well, I'm just an indecisive person. I've just never really been a very decisive person. We might not say that out loud. We just think it to ourselves. Well, it's just, I don't know, that's how I've always been. But it's important to note that indecision is not genetic. You were not born that way. It is something that is learned and practiced. And just like you train your dogs to do certain tricks and behaviors, you can train yourself to be decisive or you can train yourself to be indecisive. And habitual confusion when it comes to decision making that leads to indecision becomes part of your character over time. So if you habitually avoid making decisions, then you become indecisive. It's protective. Indecision is protective because it shields us from those emotions that I mentioned before, failure, humiliation, and deprivation. And we can claim indecision and confusion in defense of a failure. So we can say, well, I just haven't, you know, our dog misses a contact or blows their sit stay at a show. We can say, well, I just haven't decided yet how to tackle my contacts or sit stays. I haven't decided how to work on my bar knocking. I haven't decided how to teach my dog how to not go off course. And that happens all the time to all of us in, you know, some of us more than others, but it happens all the time. A lot of the times I will be teaching a seminar and or a private lesson, and I will ask a student, there'll be a contact in the sequence and they'll do the contact and I'll say, now, what was your contact criteria supposed to be? And they'll say, well, and then immediately a long paragraph follows that is a lot of indecision. Well, I haven't decided yet. Well, it's supposed to be this. Well, I'm in the middle of retraining it, but I'm not really sure. So that's a lot of indecision and confusion in defense of a failure. That happens pretty commonly. And it can be comfortable to do that, even though it's a little uncomfortable to say those things to someone else, it's more comfortable to say that than it is to decide on something where you might come to find out that you made the wrong decision. So if you can't decide on something, you never have to find out that you made the wrong decision because you just never decided at all. And rather than taking a moment to say, okay, now wait a minute, if I just rationalize this for a moment, I'll realize that if I can just be decisive and make a decision, some of the time you're going to choose right. You're not always going to make the wrong decision. So even if you are unaccustomed to making decisions and you tend to be indecisive because you're concerned about making the wrong decision, you have to recognize you're not making the wrong decision 100% of the time. Nobody is. A lot of the time you're choosing the right decision. You're making good decisions. So confusion and indecision can let you give up on something before you even start. You kind of let yourself down ahead of time. And sometimes I've discussed this with friends where we've called it the E virus, the elimination virus, where people say, well, I eliminated because of, you know, insert something they're confused or indecisive about here. Or even more, before they even run, they say, well, I'm probably not going to make it through this course because I haven't been able to work on such and such because I've been super busy, or I haven't had time to train my dog, or just lots of evidence of indecision that's provided beforehand to justify an impending failure. One of the humongous problems with all this is that if you remain in confusion and if you remain in a state of indecision, then you're preventing good experiences and good results because you're avoidant of the bad experiences and the bad results. And this is a huge thing to bear in mind, that, and it can be a really horrible downward spiral where you avoid making decisions because you're avoidant of failure, humiliation, and deprivation. But because you're avoiding making decisions, you're also preventing good experiences and good results. And you really can't have the good without the bad. You can't say, well, I'm going to avoid all of these things because I don't want to get hurt, or I don't want my dog to get hurt. And this is kind of a big one. This has been a big one for me to go through in the past when it comes to dog injury. A few years ago, I had several traumatic dog injuries, and they were really heartbreakers for me. And I avoided a lot of training after my dogs were rehabilitated from those injuries. They were perfectly sound, but I avoided a lot of training. I avoided a lot of experiences. I avoided making decisions about things because I was just terrified of heartbreak. I was terrified that my dogs would get injured again, and that I'd have to go through all of that heartache again. And I kind of backed myself into a corner because I did avoid heartbreak, and I did avoid situations where dogs might get injured, but also I avoided the opportunity for cool experiences and celebration. And there was a lot of anxiety in that for me that I had to work with other people to get help from them to help me see that, hey, you know, you can't avoid bad experiences, because if you avoid bad experiences, you essentially avoid all experiences. The only way to avoid bad experiences is to avoid all experiences. And then you're just avoiding life, basically. So you have to recognize fundamentally that making decisions will involve some heartache. It will involve failure. It will involve humiliation, and it will involve some deprivation. But the only way that you can also have good experiences is to open yourself up to the possibility that some of your experiences will be rotten. There's going to be a whole range of experience. Some of your experiences are going to be incredible. Some of your experiences are going to be absolutely rotten. And there's going to be a whole lot of experiences in between. But if you're constantly working to avoid bad experiences, the only way to do that is to avoid all experiences entirely. And it's really an emotionally stunted way of going through life. Whew. So that's kind of a little bit of me unloading on you guys. But if you've been in the Agility Challenge for any length of time, I have talked about the heartache that comes with dog injury and overcoming dog injury and rehabilitating dogs from injury, and the anxiety that can come after that, getting your dog back into the ring. And so that whole cycle of confusion and indecision was one that I went through personally in that regard. And that took me a couple of years. And it was really, I really had to work through that thought model that I have talked about before, where circumstances lead to thoughts, they trigger thoughts, which trigger feelings, and your feelings direct your actions, and your actions lead to results, and your results are serving evidence that serve, they serve as evidence for those original thoughts. So it's all kind of a self-reinforcing circle. So I really had to think about the thoughts that I was having about circumstances that involved risk and the potential for injury. All of agility was the circumstance. And that circumstance for a good long while triggered thoughts of my dog's going to break, my dog's going to get injured, it's all going to be over. And that immediately triggered feelings of anxiety, panic, avoidance. And all of that led to actions to avoid injury and essentially avoid experience. So that one was a tough one for me to get over. So what do you do to get out of this cycle? That's the next thing. The first thing you have to do to start to even think about breaking that cycle and decide, all right, I think I am actually sitting in confusion as an indulgent emotion. I'm sitting in confusion because it's comfortable. I'm sitting in indecisiveness because it's comfortable, and I'm working to avoid fear of failure and humiliation and deprivation. So the first thing you have to do is sit back and observe without judgment whether or not you're in confusion and indecision. And the best way to observe without judgment is to, I think at least, is to write it all down, to just dump all your thoughts onto a piece of paper, good old-fashioned paper and pen or paper and pencil, or pull out your keyboard and just dump your thoughts. Another great way that you can just dump your thoughts out is to pull out your phone and open up the Notes app on your phone and just start dictating. Hit the little microphone icon and just start talking, and it'll all get dictated into text. And then what you can do after you've done that for 5 or 10 minutes is to look at those things that you wrote down. Write down all the reasons that you're confused and indecisive. For 5 to 10 minutes, just dump it all out of your head onto written word in some way. Paper, Notes app, whatever. Write down all the reasons that you're confused and indecisive. Why can't you make a decision and move forward? Just download it out for 5 to 10 minutes. And then look at each reason and ask yourself, is this really true? Is this really true? And what is it going to cost me to continue to indulge in confusion and indecision? Is it going to cost me the opportunity to have good experiences? Is it going to cost me the opportunity to progress with my training? Is it going to cost me the opportunity to learn something new, to expand my skills, if I continue to kind of wallow in confusion and indecision? So as a dog trainer, you are also a problem solver. You have to be. And in order to problem solve your own thoughts, it really can be helpful to get those thoughts at arm's length, get them away from you so that you can evaluate them and look at them as though you're helping a student or a friend. We're often so close to our own thoughts and feelings that we just can't see a way out of them. We just keep wallowing in them. And then when a friend or a student presents us with exactly the same issues, we have no trouble spotting their problem and saying, well, you should just do this. And then they'll look at us like, wow, you know, I never even thought of that. Why didn't I think of that? That's so simple. Because you're at arm's length from it. You're not emotionally invested in the thoughts of your friends and students the way they are invested in their own thoughts and feelings. So take your thoughts and dump them out so that you can get at arm's length from them and look at them as though somebody else wrote them to you, as though a student wrote them or a friend wrote them or a training partner wrote them. And see if getting at arm's length from those thoughts and questioning whether or not they're really true and questioning what the cost is to continue believing those thoughts, see if you can get out of confusion and indecision and commit to some plans of action that are going to change your current results and allow you to make progress. Now, I'm not promising that you're going to immediately enjoy all of the success in the world, but progress is movement, and changing your current results is movement. And it's definitely going to involve stumbling and falling and failing and tripping up. And it might even involve sliding backwards with skills. You might find that you had a really sketchy sit stay and you decide to take some action so that you can move toward a really solid sit stay. And you take that action, you start taking action, and your sketchy sit stay becomes no sit stay. The whole thing, which was pretty fragile to begin with, crumbles into a heap. But that's okay. That often, you know, you hear the saying, you can't make an omelet without scrambling some eggs. Taking action and getting a change in results in the direction of progress sometimes does involve things falling apart a little bit. And that's okay. That's not a reason to throw your hands up immediately and say, see, I knew it wouldn't work. I'm going to go right back to confusion and indecision. So in this way, being able to evaluate your own thoughts and get out of confusion and indecision for the sake of just wallowing around in them, in this way, you are your own instructor and you are your own coach. And I have to say that it's not always easy. And for a long time, I was basically on my own with only periodic coaching for most of my formative agility years. Now, I started agility a long time ago. And any of those of you who also started agility before the age of YouTube or social media will identify with this. You are on your own to problem solve. You might have gone to class every week, but in between class, you are on your own. You are not picking up the phone and calling your instructor constantly with every little training problem. And so, like me, you had to problem solve. And at the time, I wished I had a coach. I always wished I had a coach. But I wasn't inactive. I didn't sit around thinking about all the different ways to do things. I wanted to make progress. And so I tried stuff. And a lot of the time, it was terrible. I tried some really crazy things. And as long as they were safe, it was fine. You know, they were always safe things mostly. I did some crazy things though. But it did enable me to be my own problem solver. So I really encourage you to think about the ideas of confusion as an indulgent emotion, indecision as an indulgent emotion, confusion and indecision as safe and comfortable places to be, and they're risk-aversive places to be. And think about how you can question those beliefs that you have about, well, I can't decide. I don't know. And think about also, where is your inner voice? Where's your inner wisdom? Drag up some of your inner wisdom and think about if you can solve some of these training problems yourself, or get some specific information from specific people or clarification from specific people so that you can problem solve yourself and learn to develop your inner wisdom. You can 100% call BS on yourself. You can totally do that. It's not judgmental, but you can call BS on yourself. If you are being lazy in your handling when you're training by yourself, you can call BS on that. You can say, I'm being lazy. Come on. I can do that front cross. Just try a little harder. I'm just going through the motions. Put a little effort into it. It's all right if you get sweaty. You can call your own BS with, I don't think I can make it to that blind cross. Call BS on yourself. I think I can make that blind cross. I mean, what's the worst that can, I'm going to try it. What's the worst that can happen? If you have a coach, they can help you facilitate this process. And I want to be clear, an instructor is not necessarily the same as a coach. It can be the same person, but there are plenty of instructors who are not coaches. A lot of dog agility instructors in particular did not get teaching degrees. They did not learn how to be coaches. They really got passionate about dog agility, had a reasonable amount of success themselves, and other people looked up to them in their community. And so they became the go-to person and realized they could make some money. And they realized also they were passionate about helping others and became instructors. But it's one thing to help people with their mechanical skills and their timing and their training. And it's another thing entirely to gently and positively call other people on their BS and help them question their thoughts and beliefs. So those are two different things. You know, if any of you guys know me, you know I'm a huge fan of Ted Lasso, which is a TV show on Apple TV. I absolutely love Ted Lasso because I think he provides fantastic examples of how to call people's BS without being judgmental. Just, I think you can do better. I think you can do better. I think you can question whether or not those thoughts and beliefs are true. I think you might be avoiding stuff. I think you might be avoiding progress because you're afraid of failure. I love Ted Lasso. I watch it over and over and over again because he's a great coach, a great example of a no-nonsense coach. He doesn't know anything about soccer, which is the sport that he's coaching. So in that sense, he's not an instructor. He's relying on the other coaches to instruct the players when it comes to mechanical skills. He's just a coach. So that's another great example of the difference between an instructor and a coach. And a coach is going to help you deal with the processes required to get your brain on the right track to tackle dog training in a productive way, not just what you tackle in terms of this or that sit-stay method or this or that weave-pull method. That's mechanics. But how to wrap your brain around the right mindset in order to tackle those methods productively. And so that's kind of where I come in with this podcast, is that I don't necessarily need to instruct you in however it is that you're training weave poles or sit stays. I don't have to agree with how you're training it. There's lots of different ways to train weave poles and sit stays, for example, and they all tend to work so long as you follow the process and you're purposeful about it with your training and your practice. And you've got your brain wrapped around the correct mindset, a good frame of mind to be decisive and brave and courageous when it comes to fear of failure and fear of humiliation and fear of deprivation and those sorts of things. So we talk a lot about that in the Agility Challenge. If you're an Agility Challenge member, a lot of this you've heard before, but again, a lot of this stuff we just have to hear over and over and over again because it's a process. None of this is a destination. Again, it's like dog training. As soon as you stop reinforcing something, the behavior is going to slide. And so all of this stuff where we are trying to maintain a growth mindset and keep out of indulgent confusion and indulgent indecisiveness and continue to take action that's going to lead to results and progress. That's all a process. And some days when we're tired, it's harder than others. I also use diet as a good example because some days for me, it's just harder to stay out of the snack cupboard than others. Some days it's easier than others. Some days it's harder than others. So anyways, that's it for today. I wanted to bring up confusion and indecision and how that all relates to lack of action. And I mentioned in the last podcast episode that inaction is a form of action. It's just not a very good form of action. So with all of the information that we have access to and all of the knowledge we have access to, it can be very easy to be indecisive. It can be very easy to avoid pulling the trigger on one plan of action because we're just not sure. What if tomorrow another plan of action becomes available to me? Maybe I'll just wait a day. It can be very easy to slip into that indecision. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on this topic. I'd love to hear how maybe you've discovered that confusion and indecision are a way for you to avoid taking action that might lead to failure. If it's a way for you to protect yourself from anxiety or vulnerability, I'd love to hear from you on this topic. You can leave a comment in a couple of different places. If you're an Agility Challenge member, you can head to www.theagilitychallenge.com and leave a comment where we can talk more in depth on this. If you're not a member, I'd also love to hear from you. Head to podcast.theagilitychallenge.com/4 and leave a comment on this episode. If you're really enjoying these podcasts, I'd love to hear from you. Just, general comment on what you think about it. Don't forget, you can share this with others. And also you can subscribe. I left some information at the bottom of the post for this podcast so that you can subscribe in iTunes or your podcast player of choice so that you don't even have to go to the website or any website to get information about the next episode. It'll just get delivered to you so that you can listen to it when you're on the go. All right. I hope you guys have a great rest of your week and a great weekend. So I'm going to sign off till the next time, and I'll see you in the next episode. If you enjoyed today's podcast and you've got somebody in mind who you're pretty sure could benefit from discussing the things we talked about today, head to the webpage for today's episode, podcast.theagilitychallenge.com/4, and scroll to the bottom. You'll see a section that says Share the Love that has some instructions and links for how to subscribe to and share this podcast, and also how to leave a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. I'm a pretty tech savvy person, but even for me, it was a little tricky. So I've included a how-to link for you at the bottom of the page. So go ahead and head on over to podcast.theagilitychallenge.com/4, subscribe to the podcast, leave a review, and share it with a friend. Also, you can leave a comment below the episode and let me know your thoughts about what we discussed today. I'd love to hear from you and maybe discuss your thoughts on a future episode. Thanks for joining me on the Agility Challenge podcast with Daisy Peel. If you'd like to take your agility training, handling, and mental game to the next level, check out that ebook that I mentioned at the top of the episode. You can get it for free at podcast.theagilitychallenge.com. It's not for sale anywhere, and it's only available to subscribers of my email list. Getting on board with the right mindset when it comes to your dog agility handling and training challenges is a game changer. So make sure you check it out.